turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. This episode is number 113, and what we're going to talk about today is principles of permaculture. Now, I know some of you might be thinking, what in the world does permaculture have to do with building a legacy? And actually has a lot to do with it. The fifth tenet, or the fifth principle of building a legacy, if you go back to my introductory page, you'll see that the fifth one of those is to steward resources and to be good stewards of the resources that we have. And I think the best way to do that environmentally is to practice permaculture when it comes to agriculture. And so permaculture techniques, the principles behind that are fundamental to being able to leave a legacy. If we use up all the resources, we do not manage the resources that we have well or steward them in an appropriate way, then we will have nothing good to pass on to future generations, and the legacy that we will have left to them will be a legacy of depletion rather than a legacy of abundance. And so I'm here to help you build a multi-generation legacy of abundance. So we're going to talk about the principles of permaculture today. And before we do that, though, I want to take care of a little bit of business. First of all, make sure that you're a registered user of the website. This enables you to access the comment section and to provide feedback through each of the episodes. I appreciate you doing that. Secondly, it also helps you to maximize your time and be a good steward of your time, because you will be notified by email anytime that there is a change to the website. So anytime I put up a new post, anytime that there is a new change, anything like that, you'll be notified by email. That way you can just check back when you get the email on that. So make sure you're a registered user of that. There's no cost to that, no obligations. I won't be sending out all kinds of spam, all kind of stuff. So no worries there. Second up, make sure that you are telling your friends and family and continuing to share us on all the various social media out there. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook is what we're currently on. And I'm hoping to get some more videos up here shortly of some of the agricultural permaculture practices that we're doing here around the farm as spring sets sage. And so be aware of those on the YouTube account. And then thirdly, make sure that you are visiting our affiliates. We have several different affiliates listed on the center right column of the website. And I mentioned two each episode, and the two for today, the first up is Amazon. Of course, everybody knows of Amazon.com. It's a great company, and just about everything you can ever want, you can buy through Amazon. They've got a preferred buyers club you can be a part of, but I've got a link now on the website, so anytime you want to purchase something from Amazon, if you would go onto my website and go through there, and there's a search index right there. You can punch in whatever you're looking for, and it comes right up. And because you're going through my website, I'll get a little bit of commission on it. So that'll help support the show. I appreciate you doing that. And then also, second up is 48 Days. 48 Days is the work of Dan Miller's organization. Its design is to help you achieve the work that you love, and whether that be through self-employment, owning your own company, being your own boss, that kind of thing, or whether it be by finding the right kind of employment for you and finding the right kind of position, where you will be able to maximize your strengths and be able to be the most asset to the company in which you work, or for which you work. And so 48 Days is a great resource there. He's got all kinds of, he's got a forum, he's got a membership program there. He's also got all kinds of books and workbooks that you can download. There's several of them there that are recommended. I've got some of them listed under recommended reading. And so check out 48 Days. And then lastly, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way of doing that is by becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. With that, you have access to our exclusive only members page that gives you discounts to various vendors. And also there's downloadable material there. There's books and charts and graphs and things like that that you can download. And it will be of use to, there's probably about $50 worth of value or more to that. It depends on how much of the stuff you buy. And It is help support the show in addition to that. So I encourage you to become a Legacy Partner if you so choose. And that takes care of the introductory material. So now let's go ahead and talk about permaculture. And the first thing I have to say is that any book you read on permaculture, there'll be a little bit of a twist to these principles. And so they're not set in stone. Different permaculture advocates have come up with their own different twist on the principles. And some of them have combined some, and so they have a shorter list. Others have expanded their list, or some of them have included lists that would include other areas, not just principles, but having to do with mindset. And, you know, others were design principles and things like that. And there are some who would be considered permaculturalists, all yet they've never really come out with their clear definition of what their principles are. And so you've got Bill Mollison, who identifies seven different ones. Toby Hemingway has seven under the primary principles of functional design, and he's got three more under the principles of living and energy systems, and he's got several under the attitudes towards permaculture. And Sepp Holzer has eight. I'll just run through those real quick because I like Sepp Holzer. I've mentioned him several times on the podcast. All elements within the system interact with each other. Number two, multifunctionality. Every element fulfills multiple functions, and every function is performed by multiple elements. Number three, use energy practically and efficiently. Work with renewable resources. Number four, use natural resources. Number five, intensive systems in small areas. And number six, utilize and shape natural processes and cycles. Number seven, support and use edge effect, creating highly productive small-scale structures. And number eight, diversify instead of monoculture. And so you'll see that those are very similar to what I'm going to talk about here. The ones that I've actually gotten from, I think, were originally codified by David Holmgren, who took after Bill Mollison and became a student of his and helped him, or Bill Mollison helped him kind of get going. And so he took it from the master. But these are 12 principles of permaculture that we're going to look at. And the first one is this: observe and interact. In other words, by taking time to engage with nature, we can design solutions that suit our particular situation. And so, again, I have mentioned this before when we look at permaculture and the ethics of permaculture, that there are three views that you can have when it comes to permaculture and observing of nature. The first is that nature is perfect. This is a form of idolatry, and Christians should not be involved in that. It's not perfect. It's fallen. And the Creator is perfect. Any of His creation is not. And so maybe at one point it reflected more of His perfection than it does now because of the fall, but certainly it is not perfect. The other side of the scale is man-centered, and that is that man can dominate creation and that man imposes upon creation whatever he wills. Both of these, one would be a man-centered idolatry, the other would be a nature-centered idolatry. Neither one is correct. What is should be correct is God-centered stewardship, where we manage the resources, we observe nature, we see those things that are redeeming within nature, and we use those and observe those as principles to guide us in having dominion over the created order. And so observe and interact. So what can we observe? Well, we're going to observe energy flows. In a future podcast, I'm going to talk about how we can map our properties and come up with different solutions for those, or different aspects of the energy that is coming into our property and how we can map that out. And so stay tuned for that. But we can observe energy flows. We can observe flora and fauna. In other words, what do we have on our properties, or what do we have, you know, in our vicinities when it comes to flora and fauna? What kinds of things grow? What kind of animals are there? And, you know, we can go as minute as various insects, both predatory as well as, what would be considered pests. And then, all different kinds of plants, native species, those things that have been imported and now are growing native, all these kinds of things. We can observe processes. We can observe, you know, how the tree leaves fall in the fall, and how things bud out in the spring, and you know, observing all of these things. And I think sometimes because of our busied lifestyle and the busied life in which we live, sometimes, you know, the old saying is we need to stop to smell the flowers. And sometimes we need to stop and observe. You know, a good practice to do sometimes is just to go out and just to sit and listen. You can't do that, of course, now. It's been below 30 degrees in our vicinity here for a couple of days. And so it's awful cold. But as spring begins to approach, you can go out and you can just listen, watch, see, use all your various senses. Use your sense of smell, use your sense of sight, use your sense of hearing, all the various senses, and to observe what you're able to observe through that. You know, Matthew chapter 6, verse 26 says, "Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather in barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they?" So God, through Jesus, uses an actual illustration of observing the natural order and the birds of nature to signify a point. And so that's what we need to do as well. We need to observe nature and by that signify various areas of life. And then Proverbs chapter 6:6 says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise." So another example of ways in which we are to observe nature. And of course, you can learn a lot from the ant. And that proverb following that verse talks a lot about an ant and how it stores up for the future and those kinds of things. And obviously gives us insight as to how we also are to store up the abundance that we achieve for later purposes. So the first one then is observe and interact. Second one is catch and store energy. Catch and store energy. By developing systems that collect resources at peak abundance, we can use them in times of need. And so, you know, the natural systems themselves have all kinds of ways of catching and storing energy. You take, for example, a plant. A plant through photosynthesis actually catches and stores the sunlight, and then through that process then develops proteins and develops carbohydrates and all the other types of material that makes up that plant and enables that plant to grow. So it is itself is a huge storehouse of energy. You talk about a tree and how much solar energy that absorbs, and then, you know, how much water it absorbs and nutrients it absorbs through its roots, and it is an energy storehouse. And so plants can be a great catching and storing of energy resource. Water can also be that. When you heat water up through the sun, that thing radiates heat. You know, I actually have in my little greenhouse, my little hoop house, it's not a heated hoop house, but I've got water buckets in there. So with black plastic. And so as the sun hits that black plastic, warms up that water, it helps. And then that water then, you know, releases that heat at night into the greenhouse. And, you know, I've not measured to see how much warmer it gets as a result of doing that, but I'm sure that it adds some value to it. And, you know, you can store water itself in tanks. And just as I mentioned, there are buckets, but, you know, you can store water from runoff of the roof, and you can do that in all kinds of catchments of water and tanks of various kinds. We just got a 55-gallon bucket or 55-gallon container off one of our gutters, and we stopped up the other end of the gutter so that as it rains, all the water comes from that gutter into that bucket, and, you know, that stays full. And it may not be drinking water, but certainly if the power goes out or something like that, you can use that. Flush toilets. You can also use it to, you know, water animals, whatever it might be. It can be of use. And so we're storing that energy for a time in which we may need it. You can also store water. You can store nutrients. You can store minerals in soil. Soil is a great way to do that. And of course, the only way to really store it to maximize that is to make sure that it stays within the soil. And so you need to have a porous soil. You need to have a soil that is full of humus or humus so that it is able to absorb the water and absorb the nutrients, and it won't flow out. And so mulching it and all those kinds of things help. But you can also store it in the soil by making sure that you have proper contoured lined swales and things of that nature. You can contour the land so that you can keep that water on it longer. And, you know, so many people want to run their water off their land, but most of us should be trying to store the water on the land to keep it on there as long as possible. And then you can store energy, of course, through photovoltaic panels. This is also known as, you know, solar panels. You can store the energy there, store it up into a battery bank, and use it at later times. There are people now, and of course, photovoltaic panels are not as inexpensive as they will be in the future, and the price is coming down significantly over time. But this will, of course, continue to be the case, and eventually we'll be able to access these even more and more, and it'll make more and more sense. But that's a great way of storing energy as well. You can store energy also in food. You know, we grow a garden, and then we learn how to process that food and store it away, whether it be for freezing or dehydrating or canning or whatever it might be. We store that away for a future purpose. And so all the abundance that we achieve, while it is in abundance, can then be stored later. And of course, this is the whole concept of the ant. And going with the ant, you're slugging a sea your ways, who stores up her food in the winter and stores up food in the summer. He's a goddess providing abundance of energy if we can catch it and store it. So that's principle number two. Principle number three, then, is obtain a yield. Ensure that you are getting truly useful rewards as part of the work that you're doing. You know, it's a lot of work to garden. It's a lot of work to manage the land and to resource and to, use the land productively. There's a lot of work in that. Unless you're producing a yield, we will only be motivated so long to manage the resources. God never designed for us to, he designed us to be able to labor. And when he placed us in the garden, of course, it was through labor and tending the garden that we were able to produce abundance. And then even after the fall, when he kicked us out of the garden and made man labor as a result of, or in order to bring forth abundance, we still were able to profit from that. And yes, it was going to be through harder work, but there was still going to be a value in that. And the Proverbs, of course, is full of that, of tilling the land and making sure that you produce from that land. You know, it's not sustainability that we're after. Even though I use that word, and many in the permacultural setting use sustainability, we're really not after sustainability. We're actually after abundance. Sustainability just means that we're not taking out more than what we put in. But really, we should be putting in more than we take out. And so we should be producing in abundance. And this is the whole concept of leaving a legacy. You know, we don't want to be able to leave a legacy of the same thing that we have. I mean, think about that. If we were to leave only the same standard of living to our children, we want to be able to have them have a higher standard of living. We want to produce abundance financially. So why don't we want to do that also environmentally and with our agricultural lands? Certainly we do. So obtaining the yield. Number four then, let me back up to obtaining the yield. If you recall the parable of the talents, the one was given five talents, another one was given two or three different passages, and then one was given one. And the two earlier ones were able to produce 100-fold what they had been given, twice as much as what they had been given. And the one who stored his away and did not produce anything with it, the Lord called him a wicked servant. And so we don't want to take the parable too far, but the concept behind that is still the same, and that is that we need to be, as stewards, involving ourselves in building abundance. And so there has to be a yield. Number four, then, is apply self-regulation and accept feedback. Apply self-regulation and accept feedback. There is a tendency for us to want to control other people, and there is a tendency for us as human creatures to be able to make governments, civil governments, govern other people. But the reality is we should be self-governed. And the way that we are self-governed is that we use our own self-regulation and we accept feedback when we see things occurring, whether the plants are telling us something. If you go out there and we find that our plants are all wilted and it's because we haven't watered them in days, well, that would explain why. And so we take feedback from that. And same thing as we see blossom rot on our tomato plants. It means they're lacking in calcium. And so we need to take feedback and apply that to the various situations. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1 says, let me back up. We need to discourage inappropriate activity to ensure that systems can continue to function well. So we need to take notice when we're doing something wrong, obviously. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1 says, whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. And so, you know, that's pretty strong words, but we are stupid if we do not take correction when we see it. And plants can give us correction. Animals can give us correction. The land can give us correction. All of these things, and we should learn by that. Proverbs 25, verse 28 says, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. The idea behind that is that we need to be self-controlled and discipline ourselves. Because if we don't discipline ourselves, someone else will discipline us. And so apply self-regulation and accept feedback. Number five, then, is use and value renewable resources and services. make the best use of nature's abundance to reduce our consumptional behavior and dependence on non-renewable resources. So the idea behind that is use those things that are renewable that can be in abundance and be achieved more abundantly and be passed on with abundance to the next generation. Proverbs 21 verse 20 says, "There is a desirable treasure in oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it all." And, you know, there is a idea right now, of course, with peak oil and to how long we will be able to maintain the same production levels of oil that we've done in the past. And, of course, technology continues to increase that allows us to produce more and more barrels each year. And despite the threat of peak oil and those kinds of things. But how long can we depend upon that? I don't think that we can depend on it forever. And we cannot squander that. We must use it. And the way I see it is that we use those resources now to develop renewable resources and develop resources that we can use alternatively to those. And that would be a wise use of those. So use and value renewable resources and services. Number six is produce no waste. By valuing and making use of all the resources that are available to us, nothing goes to waste. You know, the perfect system is a system where everything is recycled, everything is worked back into its own system, and you know, worked back through. The hydrological cycle is an example of this. Of course, I've had an earlier episode on this. You might want to search under the sustainable tab or under, you know, just on the top right corner, you can search for this episode. But the hydrological cycle talks about how the water is continually recycled. And there, you know, we don't produce any new water ever. All the water that we drink, all the water that we use to flush toilets, all the water that is used to wash things, all the water that comes as rain, all the water that goes into the water table, all the water that is in the rivers, all of this is nothing new. It is just continually to be recycled and refined and purified and reback. And so, you know, that is something that is continuous, can continually reproduced. And that's the kind of thing where there is no waste involved. And that's the way all systems should be. And so when it comes to water in, you know, on our property, gray water, should be used to water fruit trees or orchards or things like that. And compost should obviously be used. Any type of kitchen scrap should be thrown to the chickens or thrown in the compost pile and recycled. And, you know, any kind of organic material should be put back into the soil. And it's a tragedy we go to landfills with all this organic matter. Everybody should have a composting pile and you know, get some worms or something and recycle it with your worms or however it might be, but there should be no waste. And we produce more waste in this land, in this country, than any other country does. And that's a tragedy. We should produce no waste. And what waste we have should go back into the soil, go back into producing production. And, you know, I'm in the process. I haven't quite done it yet, but I am in the process of developing a compost toilet. And I know some people are probably thinking this is just crazy. Certainly I'm not going to put it on my vegetable garden, but I can certainly put it out around trees that we're not eating. And if it composts long enough, of course, you can put it in gardens. And I'm working on trying to put it, my wife won't, of course, let me put it in the house. So it's going to have to be outside the house somewhere. I'm thinking about putting it maybe in my greenhouse or something like that. But right now, of course, we've got a septic tank. And so it does get composted. It gets composted out into the yard and that kind of thing. But nonetheless, produce no waste is number six. Number seven is design from patterns to details. Design from patterns to details. In other words, from the big picture to the small picture. By stepping back, we can observe patterns in nature and society. These can form the backbone of our designs, with the details filling in as we go. I don't know how many of you all have ever looked at a leaf, and maybe you want to go out there. Of course, it's not a good time now because most of the leaves are all crunched up and everything. But in the summertime, if you'll go out to any kind of tree, whatever tree might be, just pick one that's got leaves. And of course, pine trees have leaves also, and you can find patterns from those as well. But like an oak tree or, you know, dogwood or something like that, just go out there and pick the tree and pick the leaf off, and you'll see all kinds of patterns in that leaf. You'll see veins that go out from that tree, and then if you look at the tree itself, there are patterns to the tree, how each of the limbs go off at different directions, and petals of flower have different kinds of patterns to them, and you can see patterns in forest lines, and these are great concepts to look at when you're designing for your garden or designing for your property. There's patterns in the stacking of a forest. If you go to a forest, you'll see that there are lower level and there are higher level, and there's all these kinds of things. There are patterns of progression from old oak tree groves to new forests to prairie lands to barren lands that are just been worked, and there's different progressions from barren to forest, and there's patterns in animals and creatures. If you take, for example, one of the popular permaculture concepts is an herb spiral, and the idea is that it's taken from a ram's horn, and if you look at a ram's horn, it kind of spirals away and up. And that's the idea with the herb spirals, is something that kind of mounds up and spirals away. And, of course, they take that from nature. It's a pattern that they then model in other ways. And you can do that with lots of different things and be very creative with this. And it creates beauty. It also replicates God's design. And, obviously, He is the author of these fantastic and marvelous designs. And when we design our pieces of production on our land in such a way that it reflects His glory, it brings Him glory by doing that. And then number 8, integrate rather than segregate. Integrate rather than segregate. By putting the right things in the right place, relationships develop between those things that work together to support each other and make it so that it's better together than they would be separate. So rather than having a row of carrots and then a row of corn, and then a row of tomatoes, and then a row of peas, integrate them into the same place, into the same area, and this helps. And so, really, there are three ways that we can integrate. We can integrate species, like what I just talked about, integrating the various vegetables together. Companion planting is what it's also called. We can integrate the animals with the plants, the animals with other animals. And so Joel Salatin, of course, has made popular the whole concept of the chickens following the herbivores, and if you look in the Serengeti Plains, the chickens are there to scratch through the remains of the waste of the herbivores, and so Salatin has taken that to his farm, and of course my son does it here, where the chickens follow after the herbivores and scrape through what they leave behind, and there's a symbiotic relationship that occurs there. There's an integration of species, and then of course you have the animals integrated with the plants. And right now in our garden, we have chickens that are working in our garden to scratch up some of the fall production and the fall weeds and that kind of thing. And it's kind of helping us get things ready for the spring. And we've also got our cow fenced in there and we're giving it hay. And so as she leaves behind from her back end, her cakes, they are layered down onto hay that is in the garden. And so it's providing fertilizer for that. And as we provide her with hay, some of that hay gets trampled and provides mulch for our garden. And so this is a way of integrating systems together rather than segregating them all out. And then we also have, the 7 layers of a food forest. You've got the canopy layer, and you've got the understory. You've got the bushes, the herbaceous layer, the climbing, the rhizome or the root layer, and the ground cover, all integrated together. And what a great way. You can actually produce more when you integrate these things together, because they take different resources. They take different requirements from the soil. They have different space requirements. And rather than putting everything together in monocrop, you can integrate all these things together and it works so much better. So you can integrate species. But secondly, you can also integrate time. In other words, more mature things with less mature things. The principle applies, in maturing children as well. Especially with homeschool, we talk about this a lot with, integration of the family together. And we talk about this with, a family integrated church. where, you know, we want our children to be along with other age groups, and particularly with, you know, older adults and things like that, people who are older than them that can spur them on and bring them up. And so there's a great quality that can be gained in these relationships where you have different ages together. You know, it was never God's design for ages to be separated out to where you have every tender plant just coming up out of the ground at the same time. You want to have, you know, you want to have crops that are mature working as nurse crops for those that are just now coming up. And, you know, the same thing true, it holds true when it comes to, you know, relationships in the home and that kind of thing. Succession planting is another concept that falls in line with this integration of time. So more mature and less mature working together. And then also you have the integration of systems. So, for example, you might have a water catchment integration with a food forest on contours. And so as the water is caught in the contoured swales, and then on those swales are the food forests and, you know, the bushes and the various levels of food forestry that you've produced, you're integrating different systems together, a water catchment system along with a food forest system and a layering system, and all of these things integrate together. And rather than segregating them all out, working together, you're able to produce more. And then number nine is use small and slow solutions. Small and slow systems are easier to maintain than bigger ones. I mean, that just makes sense. And making better use of the local resources and producing more sustainable outcomes. And so the idea behind this, of course, is that start small and then get bigger as you master the small area. So many people want to have this huge garden to begin with. I've made the mistake of doing this myself. Many years I have had more garden space than I had planted in garden. And so a lot of it just went fallow. And, you know, we had mulch on it or something like that. But it was unproductive space because I had prepared for using more of it, and I used a smaller amount because I couldn't take care of any more, and because the smaller amount was integrated such that I didn't need the larger amount. Now, hopefully this year we're going to be able to expand some more and continue to grow that even larger. But small and slow is better than large and fast. And so take, for example, the infertility in the soil. To increase the fertility of the soil, you don't blast it with chemical NPK. You use compost, which is a slower process that builds the soil over time. To do away with weeds, you don't take up Roundup and, you know, cake it on the plants in the soil. Instead, you use mulch layering or sheet mulching in order to smother out the weeds and provide the organic matter necessary to build the soil. You know, it's the whole concept of the tortoise and the hare. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Aesop's fable, how the tortoise and hare went to a race, and the hare, of course, just sprinted out as fast as he could and got ahead for a while, but the tortoise kept plodding along. And you know the story, and the outcome is the tortoise won because he just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And that's the idea with this is, you know, maybe you want to start your garden with just a 4x4 area, just a square 4x4 or a square yard garden or whatever it might be, just a little spot, and you intensely plant that and you just really work it and you develop as much as you possibly can out of that space. And then the next year you have two or three or four, however it might be, and you keep building more and more. There's you know, the whole concept of having 100 square yard garden and 100 square feet garden. And then from that 100 square feet garden, you maximize and multiply that. For the next year, you have 200 or two of those 100 square foot gardens, and then it just keeps growing from there. And that's the idea, starting small and doing well with what you have rather than trying to go big and fast so much. And then number 10 is use and value diversity. We've talked about this a little bit already, but diversity reduces vulnerability to a variety of threats and takes advantage of the unique nature of the environment in which it resides. You know, so the idea behind this is don't be a lettuce farmer. Don't be a cattle farmer. You plant lettuce, you have some cows, you also plant corn and carrots and beans and peas and Jerusalem artichokes and fruit trees, and you have an orchard and you have oak trees with it, and you have some hickory trees and some hazelnut bushes and some blueberry bush, and you have some chickens and some ducks. You have a diversity, because the more diverse it is, the more it reflects the glory of God, but also the more healthy an ecosystem it is. And so you want to use and value diversity. And then number 11, use edges and value the marginal. In other words, the interface between things is where most of the interesting events takes place. These are often the most valuable, diverse, and productive elements in the system. So just to kind of clarify, some of you have probably been fishing before, and to go from the road down to the river or the creek is usually an ordeal. I remember in Alaska when we used to do this, there was so much brush and so much growth on the edge of the creek bed. I think we spent more time trying to unhook our lines from all the trees and the bushes every time we try to make a cast than we actually did fishing. And that's because there's so much diversity right there at the edge. And that's true of everything. If you look at the edge of the forest as it comes down into the edge of a prairie or on the edge of a meadow, there's so much diversity there because there's so much possibility for various kinds of species to grow there. Now, we have done a lot of damage when it comes to bush hogging, because now with bush hogging, we can bush hog along the borders of hay fields and things like that. And so we miss out on some of that diversity. And as a result of that, of course, some of the ecosystem is lost. I think it's grouse and things like that used to be able to be in numbers around here, but because they've lost some of their habitat because of the bush hog, that's no longer the case. But the diversity between the trees and the shrubs and the bushes going down to their herbaceous layer on the prairies and in the pastures, there's a great diversity there, right there at the edge, and so we need to maximize that. Look at the edge between the forest and the pasture before a bush hog, and then move the edge. The more edge that you have and the more edge that you can make, the better it is. So if you can contour your land so that there's more edges, you know, this is one of the things about the hoop culture beds that Sepp Holzer talks about, and I've mentioned this a few times. You can Google this if you want to, but the idea of hoop culture bed is that it is it's a slope, a big slope with wood buried underneath it. And the larger the slope, the more angle you have, the more edge effect that you have, rather than having everything flat, which is what most people want. They want just big, flat land. We should have lumpy land because there's more edge there, more rolling hills, more slopes, more all kinds of diversity to the land, because this provides more edge, which also produces more value in the margin. And then finally, number 12 is creatively use and respond to change. Creatively use and respond to change. We can have a positive impact on inevitable change by carefully observing and then intervening at the right time. Not going to say much about this, but in other words, the idea behind this is that as we observe the change taking place and we anticipate the changes of the seasons, maybe the seasons are changing earlier or later or something like that, or we see the changes in the plants, we see the changes in the animals, we see the notifications, you know, with rabbits. We can see that they're about ready to kindle. Even though I've got it on my calendar, you can tell exactly when they do that because they start taking the hair from their chest and making their nest in their nest box. And so this is an identification that change is about to take place. They're about ready to kindle some babies. And so creatively use and respond to change is important to be able to provide feedback to your system. And by the feedback that you receive, be able to make the necessary changes to react to that feedback in a positive way, interact with your system so that by doing that, you can then produce more abundance future as you do that. So by way of conclusion, I want to say a couple of things. First of all, take some action. Go back through these 12 principles and see how you can implement more of them into your property or even into your life this year. Maybe if you could set as a goal to increase one thing from each of these categories or each of these lists, these 12 things, into your property, that's a great step in implementing more sustainable, or as I want to call, legacy building principles for the environment. into your system. And so take some action, take some steps toward building a legacy when it comes to your environment by following some permacultural principles in your planning and your design, especially as you anticipate this spring's garden and all that takes place around that. Hopefully that's been helpful to you. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
With nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Change your legacy. What will you do to change your legacy?